Okay, great. Cosetta, who are you with?
I'm with Choices in Owenkian in East Texas.
Oh, great. Okay, okay. We have, there's several Cosettas, and there's one with the Labor's Union up in Washington, and welcome to the PLC. We always get started with announcements from Washington, what's happening with Washington, and what's happening with HMTRI. I'm going to turn this over to Heather Ballou. Heather, what's new?
Well, from headquarters, same thing as the last time. No real new news from headquarters, just they're still on track to hopefully announce the fiscal year 18 grant selections in early May. So we're just in that waiting game still. I do want to, on the HMTRI side of things, remind you guys to please register for the 2018 all-grantee meeting in Alexandria, Virginia, on August 8th and 9th, and you can simply do that by sending me your contact information to hkballou@eicc.edu, and we'll have these up on the notes so you can get the email addresses for all these things we talk about today. But definitely get your registration in. Register early. You can always cancel, but it's nice to get the information in as soon as you can. Also, for some of you that have been on the listserv, you might have seen that we actually had a call for photos and quotes. HMTRI is currently in the process of finishing up our best practices guide. What this does is talks about all the tips and tricks that you can do to make your program exceptional that we sort of collected over the years. And so we're looking for like medium to high-res photographs that we could use in this documentation, as well as any quotes that you guys have to talk about. So that request went out this week to the listserv, and I'll be sending it out again on Monday as well. So please keep an eye out. If you have something great to share, please send it my way. We'd be happy to take a look at it to see if it fits what we're thinking for our theme for the best practices. And then I'll let Bruce hit on something as well for HMTRI.
Heather,
good afternoon.
Oh, yes.
Sorry, go ahead.
Heather, there is a YouTube that one of my students put up about our program. Mm-hmm. Should I send you that link?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you.
That would be great. And then, Janet, I'd like to, I'll be getting in touch with you perhaps the next PLC. We can talk about your program because we've been doing curriculum, but you all have done so much in so many different ways that perhaps you can describe our program to the next PLC, some of the things that you're doing down there. I'll send you an email if that's okay with you. Okay, great. I'm sorry, Bruce. Continue.
Quite all right. Hi, good afternoon. It's Bruce Diamond here. Last Friday, I sent out the most recent reminder for the Certified Employee Finder and Social Media Directory. We're updating it and hoping to have it out during the month of May. Our deadline is Friday, April 6th, and I will send out another reminder on Monday. We've received about 10 responses so far, but we'd like a whole lot more. After Friday, April 6th, if we haven't received yours, I will be emailing individual people to ask for an update. And that's all I have. My email address is B as in boy, D as in dog, IAMOND. @eicc.edu. Thanks.
Yeah, we've got
Bruce,
several.
I'm sorry. Bruce,
go ahead,
I had a question. Did you get
sure.
my stuff? I think
Janet?
I sent mine in. Yes, this is Janet.
Yep.
I sent my stuff in. You know, was that just focused on social media?
No, we were also looking for graduation information, and you've got your information here. Certificates and curriculum and so forth.
I have a radio show now that I do about this stuff, and there was nothing.
Oh,
should I send that information to you?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead and send that along. I'll include it
okay.
under other social platforms maybe.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
That is a great way to get the word out in terms of whether you call it marketing or awareness. We've had other grantees that had weekly radio shows, and it's amazing the response you get with that kind of thing. We've got several things going on. So I want to just kind of recap. The PLC that you're listening to right now is, it's just a half hour, a conversation we have every other week. The next one will be April 11th. It's always the same time, same place. If for some reason you don't get the notes, we've got some new callers. We send out announcements both on our listserv, which is a very large database, and then we send it just to the PLC members. It's a smaller group of about 400 people. And you may have gotten a notice for the from the listserv, but if for some reason you don't get PLC notes on Friday, send your contact information to Heather. And Heather, for those of you who, you may want to jot this down if you're fairly new. In fact, if you only got one notice, you may not be on the PLC listserv. So Heather, could you give them your email address again so they could write that down?
Absolutely. It's H, K as in kitten, B as in boy, A-L-L-O-U at EICC.edu.
And just tell her you need to be on the contact list, and she'll make sure you're on the major list, but we'll make sure you're on the PLC list. And the difference is that the PLC list, the people on that get the post-session notes. And also people on the PLC list get invited to the all grantee meeting that we've been talking about, and that's in August. And it's basically a free meeting, but you have to get to Alexandria, and we pay the housing and most of the meals except in the evening. And that way we'll you can come to the meeting, and that's it's an all grantee meeting. It's great because you're going to meet with all the EPA headquarters staff. We're going to have small groups. It's 2 days with travel on the third and fourth day, and you get a chance to talk to your regional coordinators. We have breakout sessions about all the components of developing a grant. So if you're fairly new, all the grantees, we usually get about 100% of the grantees. But if you're not a grantee, we welcome people who are really thinking of submitting a proposal next fall, or are serious about expanding their program, as we talked about before this program started. It's really a valuable thing to go to, because you'll be able to talk to the people who actually will be evaluating the grants, and people who have had grants for 20 years and very knowledgeable. So it's a networking event with breakouts. So just to let you know, if you just got maybe one notice about this PLC and wasn't sure and you just tuned in. Well, the last three sessions we've been talking about curriculum, and as we've said before, curriculum is very flexible in the EPA Environmental Workforce Program. And the reason it's flexible is that every community is different. They may have similar problems, but they're different degree, there's different priorities. And we talked about the core curriculum last time. The core curriculum are those, we call them the money courses. These are the courses that are heavy technology. They're the ones that EPA supports, things like, well, HAZWOPER, which is mandatory, the 1910-120. They may include lead, asbestos, OSHA 10, which is construction safety. Those are courses that most people have, but then in addition to that, they may be a new community, they don't have asbestos issues, they may not have lead issues, but they may have other issues. And those are the courses that you want to do your needs assessment, and we're going to talk about needs assessment in a different session of the PLC. But when we look at this curriculum, it's like a great big jigsaw puzzle. We've got the core curriculum, which, as I said, are the heavy tech courses. And when you develop that, you have to have courses that are in the EPA's priorities. We've got links, and there'll be links in the post-session notes. And we're also coming out with a newsletter about curriculum in a few weeks that'll sum up all of these things. But the EPA, for this program, is funded by about a dozen different offices within EPA. It's the old smokestack type funding, where each office of water, will support, they might throw in $40,000 into this program. Of course, Solid Waste Emergency Response puts in about $3 million into this program. Each office puts in a certain amount, and they want to make sure that they're represented in the training. So unfortunately, there's a requirement that the money that's spent on these different core curricula that I talked about is proportional. We talked about that in the last PLC meeting. There's also, besides the core curriculum, a subset of that called the awareness curriculum. And awareness and core kind of mix together their EPA priorities, but they may not justify a full course. And often people will work the awareness curricula into the core curriculum. And the reason we call it awareness is everyone recognizes that every employer might want something a little different. And we want, we want our graduates to have this heavy technical bent in certain areas based on your labor market assessments. They may have some other things that they want you to know. And if you know the words, you know the acronyms, you know a little bit about it, and you can make a conversation with your employer, there's a high likelihood of you getting the job. So EPA and its flexibility allows for the individual courses, and they allow for some awareness courses. And those courses are usually light. They might be combined. They may be integrated into the core curriculum. And they're in the same technical areas, and EPA does support those. Then we get to the, I don't want to say black swan or the elephants in the room. For political reasons, EPA doesn't allow certain things. One, they don't allow indirect costs, which I'm going to diverse for that. We got the good news this last week that during that big omnibus budget, EPA was fully funded. Now, that's a good sign. We're not exactly sure what fully funded means. So the good news is that they didn't cut the shreds out of EPA, and the programs are fully funded. The next thing that we'll be waiting to hear is, as EPA reallocates the money they get, how are they going to fund each of these programs? So the good news is this program is going to continue, and the question is, how much money will they be putting into this program? And usually it has ranged from 10 to 14 or 15 grantees will be awarded the $200,000. So it all depends on how that money is reallocated within the EPA, but it is a positive sign. There's also a thing in the omnibus bill that indicated that they at least in the other grants that EPA gives out, there will be an allowance for indirect costs, which would also allow you to that weren't eligible before. So there's some good news in the budget, not like it started out with in the beginning of the year, but that is good. But what I'm getting at, though, is that unfortunately, EPA cannot support certain programs. And it's really the fact is they could only support those programs that have to do with EPA priorities, which we talked about earlier and last week, and only the technical courses of training and getting someone a job in those technical areas. What they're leaving out, unfortunately, are all the things that also employers need for sustained employability and also to get the job. So when we look at recruiting people, we've got a whole lot of things that we have to consider. There may be remedial education that's needed. Someone may come in and they need something in terms of math to bring them up to the group competency level. They may need financial literacy that we would like to give them, or time management, or a specific course on anger management or teamwork, basically those interpersonal skills. And of course, those have nothing to do with environmental cleanup assessment or remediation. So they're basically not going to be funded by EPA. The question of the RAL is, if they're not funded, do we have to have them? And unfortunately, when you read the RFP from last year, which will be similar to this year's, you do have to have them. And we'll talk a little bit about the extent of these services and courses in a little bit. But you have to have them to have a good program. but at the same time, EPA is going to support them. And what we're going to be talking about in a second will be, well, how does that work? The second thing that EPA will not support is the student support services. We're talking about things like child care, drug, alcohol rehabilitation, transportation to the training center. There might even be stipends or housing assistance, or it might be legal assistance. And a lot of people in your target group may need that supporting assistance. I'd go a step further that if you don't have student services, your retention rates may fall dramatically. And it could be someone is capable. They passed all of your screens on who you're going to let in the program, but they can't get to the program, or they have kids. We have a lot of women, single mothers, enrolled in these programs. They need the child care. You can't always expect them to leave that child with a family member or a friend. There's also people that develop issues with drugs and the whole issue of drug rehabilitation. So the next logical question is, you're telling me that we need to have it in our well-rounded program. Our students need it to get employment, but you're not going to give me the money to do it. And this has been an issue since the program started. And the reason, it's not that EPA is being cheap or anything, it's the fact that OMB, Office of Management and Budget in Washington, and the congressional budget watchers, they, when this program got started, there was a lot of reasons not to fund it. It was in a time when they said, we want you to be a regulatory agency. You're not a training agency. We don't do welfare here. Part of the justification, well, is such a thing as environmental justice, where we need to train people in communities who can get the jobs as a result of brownfields economic redevelopment. But they would not let EPA support soft skills or on the student services. EPA did not have a choice. If they did, they would have included these in the program. So the result is we're making do with these unfunded programs. The next logical thing to do is, how do we support them? And of course, the justification for not putting them in the budget was there are a lot of other government agencies out there that'll give you this support. They include, and they're usually funded by block grants, CBD grants out of Washington through the Department of Labor or HHS or HUD. There's even DOT. There's a lot of money, and the way it works, it goes to the states, and then it goes to the WIBs through the Workforce Investment Boards, and they have control over how this money is spent. And so the issue is prospective grantees really have to connect with the social service organizations, whether HHS, whether it's the WIB. And because they're block grants, it's not likely you're going to get that funding directly from the government, from these big agencies. You'll get it through the state services. So it's critically important that you go to the state service organizations. And we're talking about your Department of Health. You're talking about your workforce investment boards, probably one of the most important in many cases. Workforce investment boards, if your student qualify, they can get transportation, they can get equipment for training. Many of our grantees, every applicant that comes in, they'll screen them to see if they qualify through the workforce investment board for uniforms, equipment, textbooks. They'll provide them sometimes transportation. There's a whole list of things that they can get through the Workforce Investment Board if they qualify. Now, here's another chink in the whole process. Because the money comes down from Washington into the states, each WIB is different. And we've got some states that have incredibly generous Workforce Investment Boards. In fact, we've got many grantees who are Workforce Investment Boards. They have the funds. They support these students as part of their overall mission. So they're getting the money, and they're putting that into the students. So students are not only in the program, but they're getting benefits. And of course, EPA terms this as leveraged resources. Another one that would be just like this would be HHS. Another one might be social service organizations that are standalone. They're getting money from all different sources. They may be collecting money from philanthropists, or they may be getting from social service organizations in the community. A lot of faith-based organizations will support. When you talk about childcare, because these are smaller grants for smaller communities, in some of your communities, the faith-based organizations might take care of childcare. There are city services that would provide transportation. Many of our programs have special arrangements that as long as you're in the program and 6 months after your program, they'll either subsidize or give you a special card so you can catch the public transportation to and from training and within limits to the job. So these are all the different types of programs that you have to secure these student services from. When we talk about unsupported curriculum in financial literacy, many banks, believe it or not, will be happy to give you in-kind assistance and have bankers come and train your students in financial literacy, financial management. The anger management people will come in. Now, some of our grantees are already social service organizations, like Aberroll, Fortune, up in the Northeast, have social service. They're actually social service agencies who have gone in reverse. They have all of these unsupported services as their regular mission, whether it's child care, drug rehab, all of those. They're already offering those, and they've been offering, and a lot of those are community organizations. And then they applied for the EPA grant, and they almost work backwards. They have as their core mission everything that EPA doesn't do, and they're actually adding the core curriculum into their existing services. So they're doing it in reverse. And, of course, if you're going the other way, you have to try to locate the Aberrolls or the Fortune Societies. You have to look at those organizations and see what they're doing. And, of course, there's other organizations like OAI who have other grants going on, and they could get some synergistic opportunities from these other grants to work with their environmental workforce development job training grant. So it goes a lot of different ways, and it's not a slam dunk. But what it does require, because it's a great big jigsaw puzzle, is at this stage in looking at your grant, whether you're improving your grant or whether you want to add some social services or whether you're just thinking of forming applying for a new grant, you've got to start scoping out your community and seeing who in your community does social service. Are there banks that are doing that? Are there community organizations? Are there people who have other grants that are doing it? We've got that we've had on the PLC, people that are, whether they're young community developers or youth core, as in Wisconsin and Milwaukee, or even some of the old CETA grants, the old Department of Labor grants. These are people who have other grants, and they're getting dollars from other grants, and they're using some synergy to provide these some skills that are unsupported. We all talk about Art Shanks up in Oakland, where he gets Youth Corps money. He gets, and it's basically construction-oriented program, but he's using that, and EPA will not support construction curriculum, but he can use the funds from this other program in combination with the environmental workforce program and train people in the unsupported skills. Of course, EPA won't support construction skills except for the ones that have to do with health and safety. So there's these ways of using other programs. And the interesting thing is they're getting paid to deliver services to the same people you are. So it's not a duplication effort. It's actually a win-win situation where they're completing their mission by providing these services to the people who need the services. And you're using those services in your grant to provide support to the people who EPA won't fund. So when you look at this in total, it's a lot more work, but it's very efficient, and it works. And the only question I would have is, what happens when you're in a community or you're developing a program and there's nobody? You've got a terrible WIB. You might be in a very isolated community. There's no social support services. There's no money available that you see that you could find. And, of course, EPA would give you the short answer. Well, you have to find a target group where there are those services. And this is all part of this planning process. You have to locate a community that you can, as part of your early planning process, which we're now in, and when you pick your partners, you have to make sure that most of those partners can offer you leveraged services. But let's take the example, there's nothing. The only thing that you might be able to do, or if you can only do limited things, that you may not get all of the things I mentioned through leveraged services from leveraged partners. You may have to go back and really go back to the very beginning and look at your screening criteria when you're recruiting students. Who are you going to be screening? And, of course, we've talked and we'll talk again about screening, student recruitment and screening. And when you're talking about this training program, you're going to get all kinds of responses, and there's going to be a huge diversity in skill and knowledge abilities, and some people might need remedial math, some need English, reading, writing, some have anger issues, drug issues. You may have to go back to the very beginning and think about take a hard, long look at our recruitment process. Who can we realistically recruit that is going to be successful in finishing this program? If we've got people who you wish you could train and get them into this program, they just need a lot of remedial education. They need more in the math. They can't get past the TAB test. A lot of them are 7 or 8 or 9 on that. They can't, in the personal interviews, they may have anger issues or they may have teamwork issues. You really then have to go all the way back to the very beginning, and you've got to customize your application screening to what unsupported skills you could provide. And it's kind of cruel because we're out to help as many people as we can, but if a person is not capable of successfully completing the program, everyone loses. The person that's enrolled and is in over his head loses self-esteem. The person that he took his seat does not have a chance. So someone who could have filled that seat is now occupied by someone who has no hope of really completing the program. So you really have to think hard at that point as, do my unsupported services fit the class that I'm recruiting? And we've talked on and off about this diversity issue and disparities. The more rural your community is, the more likely you're going to have these huge disparities between someone who's never been in a classroom and someone who just got out of some other program and is real sharp. And then you get into your training classes and the person that's doesn't have the opportunities or is not up on this or hasn't looked at a math book in 20 years, he doesn't have a chance. And so you have this choice. Do you hold up the class for him or do you train to the lowest common denominator? Those are choices you're going to have to make. There's a certain amount of this remedial training that you can do within your core curriculum, but you have to be careful. For example, if you're doing volumetric flow of water through a pipe or through some river, you can teach that math as you go along, but you have to make sure that the person on the other end has enough background to be able to catch on quickly. That would go with all your core courses. EPA doesn't expect everyone to be able to do all the calculations instantly. So you wouldn't need a remedial education course as much as bringing some of those things into the program. The thing about drug and alcohol rehab, that's a tough one. You know, it's not supported. Most of our programs say you've got to take care of it or get help or you got to get off of this because you can't graduate unless you pass the drug test as we go along. So basically what I'm saying is the whole thing is a gigantic jigsaw puzzle. And quickly, I just want to mention, and we've run out of time, and I'd like some people to tune in. and maybe we should do this another time, but a little word about trainers. You have to make sure that your trainers can deal with the target group that we just talked about. You have to make sure that they can fit your schedule. And one thing I would suggest is on all of these things is you line up all of your vendors, you line up your trainers, you line up your partners who are going to deliver the social services way before you even contemplate or start thinking about writing the grant, because the problem with this grant is all of these pieces have to kind of fit together and make that work. So, but we've got some people here that have had a lot of experience in this area. Janice, for one. And Janice, your demographic is a little different than many of our, I would say, don't your students tend to be a little bit more educated, would you say?
We have a huge dichotomization in our population here in New Mexico, especially northern New Mexico. We have a whole bunch of people with PhDs and masters, which represents about 20% of the population, and then we've got a whole bunch of people that barely finished high school. In fact, we have a 40% dropout rate from high school in northern New Mexico.
So you're dealing with this huge disparity. And now, do you provide remedial education, or are you not in that place?
I don't, but our school, we have an adult education program here at Santa Fe Community College that sometimes, like when people come and they apply and they say, oh, I don't have a GED or I don't have this or that, I direct them to other resources within the college that so they can get, you know, those minimum requirements. There is no way in New Mexico to do environmental work without the GED.
Right. So the way you've done it is actually in your acceptance requirements, bring people up to a minimum level of skills and knowledge so that they could take care of that. You have less of a problem with unsupported curriculum then.
Right.
As part of your school.
I just don't
know. Now, OAI.
When I'm fishing for my students, I set a minimum set of criteria that I have learned over the years in any of the program, you know, any of the training programs I've set up for employers or anyone else, that if unless you have these three or four things, there's no way the people have to show that they want it. So show them how to get it and then step back, and when they get it, then consider them.
Mm-hmm.
That may sound cruel, but that's what I found works.
Well, you have to consider that. Now, Cantina and OAI, you deal with a whole lot of groups in different situations, don't you, over there?
Yeah, we get people from, of course, all walks of life, and pretty much kind of what you already touched on. We're really intentional about who we want to train, or more so those that will be most beneficial for the training. So they have to want it, and they have to be able to they have to take a test. We do the TAPE test to see where they are. And for those that don't test so well, they probably will have a few challenges with, you know, like the HAZWOPR course. But those are individuals we would know in advance that, you know, we may have to take them to the side and have some additional training for. But, mm-hmm. but yeah.
It is a challenge. And the less connected you are to city government, the more of a challenge this is. People in city government, they have all kinds of resources, and they've kind of been networking with people, and they could find out, oh, HHS will do that, or, you know, we've done some programs with the bus company, or, you know, the better connected you are, the easier it is to get these unsupported resources. Having said all that, I don't know people who have said, we can't do this program because we can't get unsupported resources. It's just a lot more work to to get those partners going and to get those
connect
commitments.
The dots.
Yeah, you got to connect the dots. And one thing to remember is what you need, there are other programs being funded by the government, usually state government, local government, that their mission is to deliver those services. So when you think you're asking for help, you're actually doing them a favor because they've got to show their sponsors that they're actually delivering for the money that they're getting. So that's probably the bright spot of it. You shouldn't be timid in going out and asking people, could you give us these services as a leverage partner? And if you can't, do you know someone who can? You know, that type of thing. So, well, we're going to get we're actually behind our time, so we promise everyone to try to get to at least the 30 minutes. And does anyone have any other questions about the EPA's not supporting these programs and what to do when they don't? Anything that we haven't touched on? Okay. Well, we'll be sending out notes in 2 days. And you look at those notes. If you have any questions, you could just email Heather about those questions and EPA policy or whatever. We're going to have links to the last year's RFP in there. So for those of you who are new, you'll be able to see, more likely be very similar to last year. So you'll see what EPA is requiring of you. Well, very good. If there are any questions, we'll talk to you all in 2 weeks on the 11th, same time, same place, same phone number.
Thank you, Mike.
Bye.
Everyone have a good day.
All right.
Okay.